Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
Son, Jesus loves you more than you will know. Well, well, well. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray.
Talk about the music of a generation. Yes, Simon and Garfunkel recorded some of the greatest music of my childhood and of so many other people who are now getting an opportunity to hear that incredible music again in the Simon and Garfunkel story playing over at Broadway in Chicago's Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. It's a great venue. It's where I do my backstage show. And it's a kind of an intimate place that lets you really connect with the actors who are playing Simon and Garfunkel. And guess what? I've got them both with me now. Let's chat with them, playing the role, or I should say, playing and looking like Paul Simon is Taylor Bloom, and looking even more like Garfunkel is Ben Cooley. Taylor and Ben, welcome to my WGN podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ben, you're getting the first question. Because you have, like, sure. Art Garfunkel's hair. So I got to know, I did look at some past pictures of you, and, you know, your real hair isn't kind of far from it. But would this be your hairstyle today if you weren't playing this role, or did you Garfunkel it up?
I definitely Garfunkeled it up a little bit. It is normally a little bit shorter, I would say. I like to keep the curls, though.
Okay.
Yeah, it would definitely be shorter than it is now.
All right. And Taylor, Paul Simon made your life easy because he's just got normal hair.
He did indeed. For a while there, I thought I was going to have to do that sort of monk-like hairdo he has on the cover of Bookends, but I'm glad they let me skip that.
Aren't you lucky that you're not, you know, they could do this like Beatles, The Rain, and they kind of make you look how they did in each decade, you know? So yeah. You're lucky on that. Taylor, let me go to you. Let me explain, have you explain to the listeners of this show, because before I saw it, I didn't know what I was in for, except I knew I would hear every favorite Simon and Garfunkel song of mine, which I did, but you guys do not play Simon and Garfunkel. Tell the listeners how it is you actually do it, Taylor.
Sure. So the way the show is set up, it's sort of like Ben and I are the two biggest fans of Simon and Garfunkel you'll ever meet. And we go through the show chronologically from their early days, Simon and Jerry, all the way through to their concert in Central Park. And along the way, we share insights and factoids, sort of in the third person, about their lives, what was going on in the world, you know, what things that might have been influencing the songwriting that was going on. And so we don't portray them until we begin the songs. And then the idea is that when the song starts, our hope is that someone sitting in the audience could close their eyes and just hear Simon and Garfunkel singing back to them and believe they're at a Simon and Garfunkel concert.
Well, I think that's true. It does feel that way. And by the way, Ben, you guys may know the answer to this. If not, I will tell you. But do you know why you are not actually playing Simon and Garfunkel?
I do not know, actually.
I'll tell you. They don't have the rights. You can't. You cannot portray the actual Simon and Garfunkel.
Right.
Have always been very protective over
right.
their sort of personas and entities. So you get to be like them, but with all the show's doing the best it can. But I think it's fair enough to tell people that, because you might have some people going and saying, "Well, why aren't they being Simon and Garfunkel?" It's fair enough to say it's not your fault, not the producer's fault. That's the way it's got to be, because Simon and Garfunkel hold on to those rights. And hey, good for them, right?
Right.
So Ben, let me also come to you, because as I said, you do have the Garfunkel hair, but there's more than that. As I said, I grew up a Simon and Garfunkel fan. You've got his build, his stance. Talk to me about what it took to get ready. The whole hands in the pocket thing. I mean, you had to have studied him significantly.
Yeah, there was definitely some studying involved when preparing for the show. It was mostly just looking at old tapes of them on the internet, anywhere I could find, whether it be the Central Park concert or appearances that they had done on television. I just kind of found the tape and studied it and tried to, I guess, imitate it the best I could. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Now, Taylor, you know, because when I first met you guys here at WGN, thought, wow, they're young guys. Did you even know who Simon and Garfunkel were, I should say, or were? And then I read about your backgrounds, Taylor, and You were a Simon and Garfunkel fan thanks to your mom as you grew up in Virginia, right? She made you suffer through all sorts of music of that era.
That's absolutely right. We listened to anything from Cat Stevens to James Taylor, even some Dan Fogelberg in the car, going back and forth to soccer practices and things like that. So I definitely grew up around this type of music for sure.
And Ben, you came to it a little bit of a different way, right? I know that you were in the Sound of Music when you were a kid. Was that kind of, at least based on your bio, that kind of suggests, is that where you got bitten by the theater bug?
Yeah, I did theater, started doing theater kind of in high school. And in terms of Simon and Garfunkel's music, I didn't really listen to a lot of it growing up, but I figured out that I knew more than I thought I did initially when I was learning all the music for the show. A lot of the songs I recognized, and I was like, oh, I didn't know Simon and Garfunkel did this one or that one. So, yeah, it was a fun experience learning all the music.
And I know you guys, I'm assuming you do this every night. You guys go out into the lobby afterwards and meet people and say hi. Taylor, I guess that's an every night thing, right? I don't want to give people hope if you don't.
No, it is. We do it every night after the show. We get to meet the fans and shake hands and, hear their stories and their relationship to all the songs.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. You probably have everybody who stays to meet you and who is probably, because there is certain, it has an appeal across all generations, in my opinion, because Simon and Garfunkel have that appeal. But certainly the night I was there, I saw a lot of people of my generation who were there just reliving a great time and great music. Do you find it interesting, Taylor, when people come up and want to tell you about every Simon and Garfunkel connection they have, or are you inside your mental voice just going, please, I want to go home and go to sleep?
No, it is rather interesting. You do have the people who come up and they just want to tell you, like, I saw Simon and Garfunkel in this college theater in 1968 or whatever the thing is. But and that's cool trivia. But then you have the people who come up and they share with you something, a personal story. We had a guy come up a few shows ago before we got to Chicago who just, there's a part in the show where we play the song Scarborough Fair. Yeah. And not to give too much away, but, behind us on our projection screen, we're showing some images of the Vietnam War. And
right.
this gentleman came up after the show and just said, as a private in Asia during that time, this music meant a lot to me, and listening to Homeward Bound and thinking about being overseas, it brought me straight back. And that's a really personal account that he shared with us. And so that's kind of one of the added benefits of participating in the show, is you get to really engage with people on a personal level.
It's true, and then from time to time on the screen, they'll post a kind of a factoid about them, what they did when, or an award they did won or whatever. And I have to say, sometimes I found myself, because it all seems like yesterday, and I'll be sitting there doing the calculations and going, that was 40 years ago. So I can tell you guys, you'll be 62 before you know it. And just going, where did the time go? Just coming from a different generation. But Ben, I know one of the things you also did was you saw the duo's concert in Central Park, which of course is we get that in the show in those moments. A pretty incredible experience, especially when you learn the facts around it. That's for Ben.
Sorry.
That's for Ben.
What was the question?
You got exposed to them also by watching I think you saw a video of their concert in Central Park, which we get some of from you in the show.
Right.
And they had like a half a million people watching them back then in that concert.
Right.
What's your thought about that?
When we do that part in the show, I do actually kind of pretend that there's, that we're there in Central Park, because you see on Garfunkel's face, initially he's actually, it seems that he's quite nervous in the beginning of the Central Park concert. When he comes out, he like hasn't performed in a while, and especially not with Paul Simon. And so it's this kind of nervous energy he has in the beginning. And then, you imagine looking over, 500,000, I forget the exact number of people that were there. But yeah, it's fun to pretend you're performing in Central Park for that many people.
And by the way, Taylor, have you ever met Simon or Garfunkel?
I have not, that I'm aware of. Maybe they were in disguise. That's what I like to believe.
Yeah, you should think. And I'm assuming, Ben, same answer for you, right?
Yeah. I've never, not to my knowledge.
Actually, Ben, if you meet Garfunkel, you should go up and just say daddy. And Because it will make you probably, if he falls for it, a very wealthy man. And he's going to see that hair and just go, oh, my God, you are. That's what I would do.
There you go. That sounds like a good tactic to me.
So, Taylor, let me ask you, I'll be honest. While I'm a Simon and Garfunkel fan, there were things I didn't know. I actually kind of forgot the whole Tom and Jerry thing. I did not know some of the original songs that, you know, that they played. And, of course, they did have a love for the Everly Brothers and all that. But, Taylor, did you guys do a lot of homework for this? Or was it sort of, here's your script and this is what you got to know?
Well, it was a little bit of both. So the creator of the show does have a script that he gives us, and part of sort of the audition process is, you know, him making sure that you're able to deliver these lines to a huge group of people, but sort of in an intimate way. And so the like little factoids that we deliver are scripted, but there was also a fair amount of research that went into it. The way that Ben was describing watching footage of them performing, that goes into the actual performance of the songs. But I found it really interesting to read Paul Simon's biography, which came out a few years ago, and it's really a great book. I can't remember the name of the author, but he's sort of like famous for writing biographies. And I found, first of all, I found there were a couple things in there needed to be corrected in the show script. I went to the director and was like, hey, actually, according to Paul Simon, this is the case. This happened, not this. Oh. And so a couple of things were changed. And then it made me feel a little bit more of an authority on Paul Simon rather than just saying the lines.
I'm just trying to remember, because I do remember, was the author Robert Hilburn, out of curiosity?
Yes, that's
yeah,
him.
That's what I thought, yeah. And by the way, when you were here at WGN, one of the producers, or the producer, was here with you. So, you know, I'm just sort of curious, Ben, how involved still are producers, you know, with you guys? Are they kind of every step of the way? Because you guys are touring the country right now.
Right. They usually get involved. If we do bigger sit-downs like this, they'll come to the opening nights and, you know, kind of just be there. Mm-hmm. They're less of a, you know, it's not like a, oh, let's make sure the show's, I mean, I guess it is. They're there to make sure the show is, you know, as great as it was the last time they left it. And yeah, they're there just as a, just for the kickoff, I guess.
Now, there
usually
are
at the beginning of a new leg of a tour, or if we're doing a sit down like we are here in Chicago.
They're probably to keep you on your toes too. Make sure you don't. Are they around? No, they're not. Okay, we can slack off, right? We don't want that to happen. So, now, Taylor, also, again, part of my initial confusion was I thought that there were two sets of you guys that played Simon and Garfunkel kind of in the show. And as I talked to your producer, he sort of explained to me, no, this is not an easy show to do. You guys can't possibly do all 8 shows a week, stress on your voice and everything else. So you actually trade off. I know you guys did the first couple of nights and the other duo will do others. Is it always set up as those duos, Taylor? Do you ever like switch up and you get to be with the other Garfunkel or anything, or does it not work? Are you each other's understudies? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Well, the thing about that is that the phrasing that you come to is so particular as a team. And the funny thing is, too, if you listen to recordings of Simon and Garfunkel, you know, you'll listen to the version that's on the album and then find any live version, and they never do the song the same way twice.
Yeah, wow.
You know, there's the little details in the phrasing. They change it all the time. And so the details get so minute that the show that Ben and I do, the songs that we sing and like the details of our phrasing it's subtly different from the way that George and Andrew, our counterparts, do the show. And so we haven't tried it yet, interchanging. And I would be, actually, to be totally honest, I'd be a little nervous about it because I feel so comfortable singing with Ben. You know, you develop a relationship with someone. We've been working together. This is our second year now. And we just are very tight vocally, and also, you know, as friends, we get along very well. And so it would be a very different experience for me to do the show with Andrew, who also plays Art.
Wow. And Ben, when you watch them perform, do you pick up tips from them and say, oh, we should do that? Or is it just, hey, they do their thing and Taylor and I do ours?
I think it's more they do their thing and we'll do ours. I think me and Taylor, we watched the first couple shows they did, and it almost like messed us up. We would accidentally do some things, some phrasing that they would put in, and be like, "Oh, whoops, sorry, I didn't mean to do it like that." It was, So, yeah, I think we definitely have our differences. And until the time comes when one of us needs to you know, go on with one from the other pair, I think it'll stay that way. And I don't really see any problem with that.
So, Taylor, when you're on your own, do you find yourself like you're now a huge Simon and Garfunkel fan? You listen to their music, or is it like, no, thanks, I'm going to go put on something else right now? And if you do listen to their music, which you probably have to say, but is there a favorite? I mean, are you more of the Bridge Over Troubled Water era? Are you more of the, hey, when they were doing the Everly Brothers era? And Ben, I'm going to ask you the same question in a second. Taylor, what's your view?
I'm definitely still a fan, and I would say that even if I didn't have to, I will find myself on the train at home, you know, if I'm going to the grocery store or something, definitely listening to Simon and Garfunkel. I think Bridge is my favorite album. I think Paul Simon reached a maturity of songwriting in that album that's just kind of incomparable to the early stuff. I love their early stuff. I love, you know, Wednesday Morning, 3 a.m. I love songs like Leaves That Are Green and Bleecker Street, you know, A Most Peculiar Man. But the like, ultimate Simon and Garfunkel playlist for me is pretty much Bridge Over Troubled Water.
All right, that's kind of a classic. And how about you, Ben? Do you listen to it when you don't have to?
Occasionally. I think my taste in music switches up pretty drastically, fairly frequently, so in terms of music that I listen to, Simon and Garfunkel is definitely on there. If I had a big playlist of all this stuff, but I think more than Simon and Garfunkel, I like Paul Simon's later solo stuff, like on his Graceland album. That's, I don't know, just the more exciting, upbeat music that he has after they were apart is more of my taste, but yeah, Simon and Garfunkel, I still do listen to it.
And by the way, Ben, as you learn about the history of Art Garfunkel, I didn't realize this, at the height of their fame, when who knows how much money they're making, concert dates they could be doing all over the place, and this guy's teaching math in school.
he is quite a peculiar man, I guess, to steal a line from Paul Simon.
Yeah.
He's an interesting guy.
And I guess Paul Simon just embraced the fame a little bit more, maybe, than Garfunkel did. So let me ask you. So Taylor, what is up next for you? I mean, hopefully you'll be doing Simon and Garfunkel for years, but when you do move on from this, is it, hey, send me into a Broadway play? Is it, because you have a band? I know. So is it more about, you know, hanging with your band Coastline, or what's your future?
Well, for me, my primary focus is in theater, in the you know, acting sort of aspect of things. I love playing music, and I love getting to play music sort of on a professional level. The best part about that is getting to share the stage with our band and with Ben, you know, just consummate world-class musicians. That's so much fun. But in my future, hopefully I'm looking for, you know, being in the next play. You know, I'm always trying to audition for, you know, shows that are coming up, series, you know, anything on film. So definitely, my primary focus is on being an actor, and I'm hoping to find work in that realm in the future.
And Ben, I assume as you grow older, you want to play every role in Sound of Music until you finally get to the captain?
maybe. I mean, my future, I think, is similar to Taylor's. This experience in this show has really taught me what it means to be in a band. I've been mostly doing musical theater my whole life. So it was a much different experience being in a band and having them, you know, just having fun and jamming behind you. It's a much different experience than being in a musical. Going forward, I think, you know, musicals like Taylor always got to stay auditioning when I'm home in New York City and staying on top of all of that.
All right, well, we're going to keep track of you. By the way, Taylor, I'm guessing you guys must also feel warm when you hit certain songs. I mean, Scarborough Fair, you open with Sound of Silence. And I mean, certain songs where the audience just goes nuts because it's like it's the one they're waiting for, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's funny, too, you know, every few shows we'll have an audience that has a few, like, real, real, true blue Simon and Garfunkel fans. And you'll start one of the more obscure songs, and they'll be like, "Woo, heck yeah!" And you'll be like, "Wow, they really know this stuff." But it's also really fun when we play, you know, the ones that the whole audience loves. It's, gosh, like Homeward Bound, people just have this really warm, cozy feeling for, you know, the Boxster, people really love, and they're very enthusiastic about it. It's the best songs in the show for me are the ones where the whole band is playing together and producing something together, and it's really reaching out and touching the audience.
Yeah, and the Boxster is, I mean, I won't say when it happens in the show, but when it does, it's what a great thing to do. It's just perfect. And by the way, Ben, kudos to you, because it's no surprise that you guys do Bridge Over Troubled Waters. You'd be run out of town if you didn't. And my understanding of the story behind that is that Paul Simon wrote that for Garfunkel, basically believing at that time that pretty much nobody but him could sing it because of the range and all of that, that it was truly something that basically a Garfunkel had to do. And you just knock it out of the park, man. You just, it's fantastic. And the audience went crazy when you did it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it is definitely a difficult song and made even more difficult after, you know, doing the whole 2-hour show right before it. But yeah, I mean, that's a cool story. I'd never heard that story.
Yeah, it's so good. Notice when Taylor comes on, everybody boos him off. No, I'm totally kidding. That was just a... Give Ben his moment. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, it is. You guys are fun. I'm just having fun with you. But it was a great experience. I went with my brother and my sister-in-law, and I got to tell you, we just walked out, smiles on our face, had such a great time. I wanted to stay after and say hi to you guys again afterwards, but I was not able to do that. But I just wanted you to know what a phenomenal time we had. And the Simon and Garfunkel story is playing at Broadway Playhouse through December 8th. That's the theater right behind Water Tower. If you ever attend my backstage show, then that's where you go. And you can get tickets, of course, at BroadwayInChicago.com, but also check it out, the SimonAndGarfunkelStory.com, and on Facebook and everywhere else. So they're doing a great job of letting the world know about it, because Simon and Garfunkel were incredible artists. We played you in with Mrs. Robinson. We're going to play you out with a song that you mentioned, and because I picked it too as a favorite. Taylor Bloom playing the great Paul Simon, Ben Cooley playing the very cool Art Garfunkel with the hair. Thanks for being with me. And we're going to go out playing a little more of you guys, cast members, as Simon and Garfunkel. La, 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 la. Well, and we follow great music and great fun with an important cause and a very fun event, by the way, coming up, an annual event that I've attended now for several years, and you will want to attend as well. You know, December 1st is World AIDS Day, and one of the ways it gets commemorated here in Chicago is through, I think, one of the just greatest events that goes on here called the World of Chocolate. It truly is Chicago's premier World AIDS Day event. For the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. And if you've never been there, this is the year to check it out, because it's a blast. It seems to get bigger and better every year. Let's talk about it and talk about the great work of the AIDS Foundation of Chicago with Dustin Erickstrup. He's the senior manager for fundraising events at the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. We've gotten to chat before, and we get to talk again today. Hey, Dustin, welcome back.
Hey, Paul. Thanks so much for having me.
So what year now is this for the World of Chocolate?
This is the 16th year that we have hosted this event, and it's been around for, 16 years.
Just amazing. First of all, let's, you know, before we tell people what a fun time this is, I mean, it doesn't just exist for the purpose of having fun. It's got a mission. So talk to me about the work of the AIDS Foundation of Chicago and what the money raised at this event helps you guys do.
Yeah, great question. So AIDS Foundation of Chicago, we are about to enter our 35th year here in Chicago. And so, you know, we're celebrating our 35th anniversary in May, actually. But what the AIDS Foundation does is we mobilize communities to create equity and justice for people living with and vulnerable to HIV and other chronic conditions. And so really what we do is we try and help people, you know, so the AIDS Foundation used to help people die with dignity. And now what we do is we try and help them thrive and live longer, healthier lives. So, you know, over the past 35 years, the epidemic has really changed. And so the funds that we raise through World of Chocolate all go directly toward people living with HIV in and around the Chicagoland area. And it's everything from accessing medications, accessing healthcare, education and awareness around what HIV and AIDS is, because while the epidemic itself is around 40 years old, a lot of people still don't understand exactly what it is. And so we do a lot of educational trainings, workshops. We work with 42 different HIV service providers across the city and parts of Northwest Indiana. So we do a lot of case manager training, housing programs, and we really try and work as much possible with our case managers and people to, you know, really connect with those who are vulnerable to HIV and help prevent and stop the disease where it's at.
And recently I interviewed the president and CEO of the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, John Peller. People can check that interview out at ComcastNewsmakers.com. But, you know, one of the things you said is so intriguing. Yeah, I was around in the early 80s when the AIDS epidemic started. I was around when people said, what is this thing? That was going around. And I remember thinking, you know, I don't know what it is, but I know it's bad. And so here we are so many years later, as you've said, it's not a matter of assisting people who are dying with AIDS, but we're assisting people who are living with HIV. What is it, do you think, about young people today that still leads them to, I mean, if I was a young guy today, I'd be like, oh my God, I would never do a thing that could possibly lead me to contract a disease or whatever. But it seems that today, is it because it's become more of a chronic illness? People have less fear of it?
You know, I think it's a couple of things. I think it's sort of like, they don't feel like it's applicable to them. We've had major advances in modern medicine, and so there are things like PrEP, which is a pre-exposure prophylaxis. It's a one pill a day regimen. So if you are exposed to HIV, it's sort of like a barrier to it, and so you're unable to contract HIV. But I really think that it comes down to there was a big scare and outbreak, in the 80s and 90s, but because we have become so far advanced as far as medications go, learning more about the disease, how the disease has evolved, how we talk about and manage the disease has also changed. And so, if you think about it being a sexually transmitted disease, how people connect sexually has also changed over the past 40 years. And so it's really been an evolving process, and it's something that we are very much at the forefront of having that conversation about education and awareness, because while overall rates of infection are decreasing, what's surprising is that the number of people living with HIV is also increasing. And so our job is to make sure that those people that are living with HIV, one, aren't contracting it to their partners, and two, are continuing to have access to healthcare and medications so that they can continue to live longer with the disease, opposed to, 20, 30 years ago, where we weren't that far advanced. And so we lost a lot of people during the 80s and 90s.
And funding wise, it's something for a period of time. I think there was a lot of support from the city, the state, the feds. Is funding tougher to get these days because of the advances made? I mean, President Trump has announced he's saying AIDS is going to be out of our lifetime in 10 years. I hope that's true. But in terms of funding, are sources of funding easily still available? Or do you guys find that you have to more and more count on your own efforts?
We do have to account a lot on our efforts. The state of Illinois and the city continue to be incredible funders for us through the Ryan White program. However, because the disease itself has become more manageable, it's become a lot more nuanced in the ways that we have to access funds, whether that be from government grants, corporations, or foundations. And so we really heavily rely on individuals to help fuel our program and give us those unrestricted dollars that help us to cover the areas in which those grants, governments, and foundations kind of can't fill in. Because while we are still supported, as I mentioned, more and more people are living with the disease. So our work doesn't get any easier, because what we do is we really have to focus on making sure that those people have access to their medication so they can stay alive and that they're not transmitting the disease to anybody else.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fun part of this. We want people to have a good time. And so the world of chocolate.
180 there.
What's that?
I said we'll do a quick 180 on that.
And let's do it because, I think people need a little kick and kind of, remind them of the deal and what's going on and stuff. And we've done that. So now let's have some fun by attending the World of Chocolate fundraiser. And this is, I think, maybe the third year it's going to be at Revel Fulton Market. Used to be in some other places before that, I recall. But now you've moved it to the West Loop in a very large space. Lets you have lots of vendors. I think there's over 40?
So this year we'll have 22 different chocolatiers, and each one of them has built out a booth. I think in 2016 was our first year that we did it at Revel, and we had it was the year that the Cubs won the World Series, and there was a big sort of Cubs build out there at the Peninsula did that. And so lots of those 22 different vendors get really involved with the build out for the event, yeah.
And there's also a theme to this event, right? Sort of hanging on an ocean liner?
Yeah. So what we try and do is take a travel theme each year. And so we try and challenge all of those 22 different chocolatiers to think outside the box and think globally. And so the past couple of years, we've done sort of an airline travel theme. And this year, we're doing a cruise liner travel. So this year's theme is Anything Goes. Based off the Cole Porter musical. And what we're also doing, so you'll see a lot of nautical references. You'll see throwbacks to sort of 20s nautical thematic things throughout the event. Plus, we're challenging all of our chocolatiers and vendors to think outside the box in the anything goes, as in you can be as wild and crazy as you want to in using chocolate. And let me tell you, we've got quite a few things on the menu this year, which are fantastic.
Well, and I'm looking forward to being one of your judges. I've done this for a couple of years, and I got it because I'm a huge chocolate lover. And in case somebody thinks, oh, you mean so it's a Hershey bar followed by a Butterfinger bar? No, that's you're kind of missing the point of what's going on here. Although I imagine somebody somewhere is using a Hershey bar in there. But there are some really incredible uses of chocolate. You had a guy there last year, and his chocolate is sort of made of for a fundraising effort. You can't buy the stuff in stores. It's made available for fundraising. And but he ties certain fruits and apricots and things into it. It was some of the best chocolate I've ever had. Talk about just some of the really interesting things that folks are doing, because everybody's doing something tied to chocolate.
Yeah, everybody's doing a lot of things this year. And so I will say that I'm very excited. We've just gotten a lot of our people to submit what they're planning to serve. New this year is the Gwen Hotel, which is right downtown. They're serving smoked beef short rib with a cocoa mole and charred scallion. So they're going a very savory route with the mole sauce. And we also have somebody doing a mezcal and chocolate cocktail. We're doing a red wine hot cocoa from Persino, which is out in LaGrange. And let's see here. I know that the Cocoa Exchange is partnering with Walgreens, and they're doing a chocolate martini with the raspberry balsamic glaze. And they're also doing a chocolate milkshake, because what's news to me was that Walgreens was one of the pioneers in creating the milkshake. And so we're excited to have sort of the signature Walgreens milkshake be a part of this year's event.
Oh, that's cool. I'm not sure. I mean, I didn't know that the milkshake. I always thought of, Schwab's place in L.A. and stuff. I never thought about Walgreens being tied to it. It makes sense. And by the way, it's not just there's all this chocolate, but for people that say, oh, my God, but what if I just need something without chocolate that's savory? There is kind of the dinner buffet set up in the middle of things.
We do. Yeah. So Limelight does our catering for the event. And so we do have buffets, which is, crudité. We have some small plates. I think last year we had chicken and waffles and small cups. We've got a couple of different things with our actual food. So if you wanted to take a break, there's plenty to consume.
And in terms of the location, let people know where Revel Fulton Market is.
So it's at 1215 West Fulton Market. It's kind of right in the booming district near a ton of different restaurants and nightlife out there. And so it's at the corner of Racine and Fulton Market, right there in the West Loop.
And parking, my memory is it is street parking. No, I think you do have valet, right? Although street parking wasn't too difficult to find.
We do encourage street parking. It's also very accessible right off the train. And so I think it's off the Morgan stop on the Green and Pink line. And so it's pretty accessible to get to via public transportation. But street parking is available, and we also recommend ride-sharing services.
And there's a couple of levels of tickets. Now, it's not the cheapest thing you'll ever do in life, but on the other hand, you have to remember, it's not just about having the chocolate. You're supporting the work of the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. That's why you're doing this. So talk about the different levels of ticket prices, because one of them is a VIP, gets you some cool stuff.
Yeah, so the event itself sees around 1,000 people who come, and so it's a very well-attended event. But trust me, Revel Fulton Market is big enough to hold everybody. And so, you know, compared to other galas and fundraisers where tickets are usually $350, $500 or more, we really tried to make this event accessible to people. So our general admission tickets are $145, and they are available at chocolate.aidschicago.org. And that includes all of the chocolate samples. It includes a hosted buffet and also an open bar. And so there are tons of ways to, you know, satiate yourself for $145 throughout the night. And what's funny is that I think about it, and when I go out for, you know, three cocktails, a full dinner, and a dessert, I definitely spend more than $145, and that just goes straight to a restaurant. And this definitely has, it's more of a feel-good and taste-good sort of an evening.
Yeah, look, go to a movie and get a large popcorn and Coke, and you spend $145.
Exactly. Yeah, and our VIP tickets have an exclusive entrance. So as I mentioned, 1,000 people come to the event. And so, you know, we have a special entrance for our VIP ticket holders. They have two special bars that are just for them, plus a whole different buffet section. And those tickets go for $245. But we definitely know that we've had many people who prefer to be able to step outside of the crowd and go into the VIP lounge and sort of really take a respite and take a break and come back out and enjoy the rest of the chocolate.
It's a great night. It's December 5th, and the time, when does it start? How long does it go?
Great question. It starts at 6 p.m. on the dot, and it goes until 9:30 p.m. And it's Thursday, December 5th.
And the odds are, when you listen, last year, of course, it was pre-mayoral stuff. There were politicians there trying to become mayor. So my point is, it's got to reach not just for people who are coming to attend the event, but even important people in the city understand the importance of being there and shaking hands and meeting people of the LGBTQ community and beyond, because it's a reach out to everybody. It's just an incredible event that has such great reach. And I'm sure folks listening to us now can get their tickets. You can learn about the AIDS Foundation of Chicago by going to AIDSChicago.org. But specifically, if I'm getting it right, tickets for the event are at chocolate.AIDSChicago.org, right?
You got it.
All right. It's a great event. I will look forward to seeing you as soon as I get off the air. You know, I pop right down there and get there as fast as I can. And it's going to be great. Dustin Ehrichstrup with the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. You guys do incredible work. Congratulate John Peller as well, your president and CEO, for the work that he's doing to guiding all you guys. And I look forward to seeing you at the World of Chocolate December 5th at Revel Fulton Market. It's an event not to be missed. Tickets again, chocolate.aidschicago.org. And I know you'll be dressed to the nines, right, Dustin?
I hope to. And thank you, Paul, for being a judge all these years. I know that it's a ton of fun. We can't wait to see you soon.
It's great fun. I look forward to it. And some other WGN people are there as well. So people will get to perhaps see some folks that they enjoy watching on the air. Dustin, thank you so much. Good luck with this year's event. I hope it's the biggest and best ever.
Awesome. Thank you, Paul.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.